Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. A special treat, today's reading is brought to you by the lovely Nifty-rific and her dulcet tones, as Tech-rific described them. I think it was Tech-rific who said that. First, though, we're going to talk about part three, chapter two. But before we even do that, humble brag time. Not even that humble, this is just a straight up brag. I won another writing competition, a short story writing competition. Actually, it's the same writing competition that I won previously. But this time I won it in third person category, not first person. And before you go ahead and say, why are you just re-entering the same competition over and over? I will say this, there's different judges every time. So it's not like I'm just having the same people who I already know like my work rating different stories. So, it's the World Writers Collective Short Story Competition. And you can find my story called Linda Spends a Little Time with Chris at worldwriterscollective.com. worldwriterscollective.com. I'll leave a link in the subreddit. In the discussion for this chapter. That's what I'll do. I'll leave a link in the discussion for today's podcast. If you want to read a short story that I wrote, it's a strange one, very weird, very twisted. Probably my darkest one. I'm not like one of those guys who's like, oh yeah, I write dark and gritty stuff. I'm really not. But, you know, when you write stories, sometimes they just come out dark and gritty, and this one did. Not unlike my novel. Actually, you know what? There's probably a direct correlation. The novel I've been working on for the last 5 years is quite psychologically twisted and dark. And the thing that I do as a writer, whenever I'm working on a major project, like a novel, I use short stories as a sort of trial practice ground, or a little bit of like a sandpit, whatever they call it, to test things out. And so the short stories that I write during any novel tend to be thematically close to the novel that I'm working on, which is why this is dark and my novel's dark. But all that is a long way of saying, if you've only heard about these two, don't think that I'm just one of those dark writers. It's just a coincidence. I've also written children's fiction, fantasy books, all kinds of stuff, and a bogan translation of War and Peace. There you go. What kind of a writer am I? I don't have a little pocket. You know, a lot of writers brand themselves as like, I am the fantasy writer, or I am a whatever they are. I don't have a little niche. It's not good for branding, is it? It's not good for branding. Doesn't matter. All right. worldwriterscollective.com. Go and check out my story, Linda Spends a Little Time with Chris, rated 4.5 out of 5 by the judges. Woohoo, go me, first prize, baby. chapter 2 of part 3. Kosnyshev would definitely put a photo of his fishing trip on Instagram. How would he #caption it though? The reason I wrote this question is because he seemed like, you know, he loved to go fishing when he was out in the country. It seemed like one of those things that he loved telling people how he loves to go fishing when he's out in the country. You know what I mean? Like, he does, I'm sure he does enjoy it, but he also enjoys that he enjoys it. And he wants everyone to know, like, oh yeah, you know, I just love to get back to nature sometimes. That's the vibe I got. So I thought that's definitely the kind of guy that would post one of those photos on Instagram of like just me and nature and nothing else. This is a photo of me meditating and not thinking of anything. That's a selfie. You clearly took that. You know. How would he #caption it? And any hints about that riddle was the other question that I asked. Tech-rific said, #YasnayaPollyanna, #countrylife, #perchfishingislife, Hashtag shit brothers do and say, and hashtag blessed. Pretty good. I think hashtag blessed is the most accurate one. Oh, and country life and perch fishing is, they're all good, actually. They're all good. Actually, you know what? I got to admit something. I don't know what Yasnaya Pollyanna is, so I'm going to search for that right now. Oh, it's the former home of writer Leo Tolstoy. It's a writer's house museum. There we go. Jeez, tech, that is an obscure reference. Obscure, even. Nifterific added a couple of hashtags. Hashtag manure and hashtag no filter. Swim said the mummifish. She said, you're pretty savvy on those hashtags. Regarding the riddle, I am Norwegian said, the full riddle goes like this. The first says, we will run and run. The second says, we will stand and stand. The third says, we will sway and sway. The answer to that riddle, apparently that's a riddle, is a river, its banks, and the grass growing on them. Yeah, I don't get it either, says I am Norwegian. Yep, me either. Maybe that makes more sense in Russian. I really appreciated another cozy Life on the Farm chapter, says I am Norwegian. Swims to the mum fish. He said, Life on the Farm indeed. I know we are reading one of the greatest novels by one of the greatest writers ever, but part three so far has put into my mind the following lowbrow American movies. Funny Farm, 1988, former sports writer Andy Farmer, Chevy Chase, and his secretly aspiring author, wife, Elizabeth Madeline Smith, moved to a small farm in Vermont so Andy can focus on writing a novel. They quickly realize that the locals are not as welcoming as they'd like and that the farm is more distracting than inspiring. Having trouble with his manuscript and with his marriage on the rocks, Andy is forced to take hilariously drastic measures in an attempt to get his life back on track. Oh, the troubles of being a writer. And For Richer or for Poorer, 1997, Brad Sexton, Tim Allen, and his wife, Caroline, Kirsty Alley. Oh, good matchup, Kirsty Allen and Tim Allen. How have I not seen this classic 90s hit? Are wealthy New Yorkers with both marital and financial problems. The latter issues become a pressing matter when they discover that their accountant has embezzled millions and pinned the blame on them. Forced to go on the lam, Brad and Caroline end up in an Amish area of Pennsylvania and decide to pose as members of the religious group to evade the IRS. As the two adapt to the simple Amish lifestyle, they begin to reconnect. That sounds awesome. Like, I'm genuinely going to watch that. That sounds really good. And if it's bad, I'm sure it is. 1997, Tim Allen, Kirstie Alley. Although, no, they were prime time in that year. This might be a high budget film. I'm going to watch the hell out of that. Thank you, Swim said the Mama Fishy. Look at that, Tolstoy. You know, when you read great literature and you have discussions about great literature, you tend to stumble upon other works of masterpiece works of art, such as For Richer, For Poorer, 1997. Ah, what a community we are. Swim said the Mama Fishy also said, I read Anna Karenina first at 19. These country chapters bore the crap out of me. Now that I am a hem older, I am enjoying the lyrical descriptions of the country and Levin's tribulations with family, love, and peasants. Although I did always kind of like Levin, but back then he was kind of just this dull, boring older guy. And I disliked Vronsky thoroughly. Never did like the playboy types. Karenin wasn't even on my radar. He was so old. I am Norwegian says, you're making me excited to reread Tolstoy and Dostoy in a few decades to see how my perceptions have changed. Ha! Decades, says Swim, said the Mama Fishy. Also, I am Norwegian. Pretty presumptuous. We don't know how old Swim, said the Mama Fishy, is. That she is decades older than you or I. I'm 33, by the way. Swim, said the Mama Fishy. I'm going to guess you are, and I'm guessing purely based on, well, comments that you've made. So I've really got no idea. I'm going to guess you are in your 50s. I am Norwegian. You're 29. Nifty-rific said, food over Jung. Hear, hear, food over Jung. I mean, if you've got to choose one over the other, food over Jung. But I'm sure, you know, maybe listening to a Jung audiobook while having a cheeseburger in the Hungry Jack's car park, you know, you go through the drive-thru, you do the you use the Hungry Jack's app, and you get a free cheeseburger on the app. Not that I do that often. And then you listen to some Jung. I don't see why the two are mutually exclusive. But yeah, food over Jung. Definitely. Definitely. I'm glad we can agree on that, Nifty-rific. Now, I am going to leave y'all in the capable hands of the lovely Nifty-rific, who's going to read chapter 3. And also, I think Nifty's going to read us chapter 4 tomorrow as well, so what a treat. All right, thank you very much for listening, guys. See you tomorrow. Enjoy the reading.
Hey, y'all, this is Nifty-rific here to read another chapter to you. You know, I said Anna Karenina was one of my favorite books in the past, and I still want to say that I feel that way, but I also want to tell you that I can't wait for the book to be done. And not because, of course, I don't enjoy spending time with you very, very lovely people. I'm just ready. And I bet you're ready to read chapter 3. So here we go, chapter 3. Do you know I've been thinking about you, said Koznishev, from what the doctor told me, and he is by no means a stupid young fellow. The things going on in your district are simply disgraceful. I have already told you, and I say it again, it is not right to stop away from the Zinstov meetings, and in general to take no part in its activities. If all the better sort stand aside, of course heaven only knows what will happen. We expend money for salaries, but there are no schools, no medical assistants, no midwives, no chemists, no anything. You know I have tried, Levin replied slowly and reluctantly, but I can't, so what am I to do? Why can't you? I confess I don't understand. I can't admit it to be indifference or inaptitude. Is it possible that it is mere laziness? Neither the one nor the other nor the last. I have tried and seen that I can do nothing, said Levin. He did not pay much attention to what his brother was saying. Peering into the distance across the river, he made out something black in the cornfield and could not see whether it was only a horse or the steward on horseback. Why can you do nothing? You have made an attempt, and because, according to your judgment, it was a failure, you gave it up. Fancy having so little ambition. Ambition? Reiterated Levin. Stung by his brother's words, I do not understand it. If at college they had told me that others understood the integral calculus and I did not, that would have been a case for ambition. But in these matters, the first requisite is a conviction that one has the necessary ability and above all that it is all very important. Well, and is it not very important? Said Koznishev, stirred by the perception that his occupations were regarded as unimportant and especially by his brother's evident inattention to what he was saying. They don't appear important to me. Do what you will, they don't gripe me, replied Levin, having made out that what he saw was a steward who was probably dismissing the peasants from their ploughing too soon, for they were turning the ploughs over. Is it possible they have finished ploughing? Thought he. Come now, after all, continued the elder brother with a frown on his handsome, intelligent face. There are limits to everything. It is all very well to be a crank, to be sincere and dislike hypocrisy. I know that very well. But what you are saying has either no meaning at all or a very bad meaning. How can you consider it unimportant that the people whom you love, as you maintain, I never maintained it, thought Levin, are dying without help, ignorant midwives murder the babies, and the people remain steeped in ignorance at the mercy of every village clerk, while you have in your power the means of helping them and yet are not helping because you do not consider it important. And Koznishev confronted his brother with this dilemma. Either you are so undeveloped that you don't see all that you might do, or you don't want to sacrifice your peace of mind or your vanity, I don't know which, in order to do it. Konstantin felt that there was nothing for him but to submit or else to own to a lack of love for the common cause, and he felt wounded and grieved. Both the one and the other, said he resolutely, I can't see how it is to be done. What, don't see how medical help can be given by distributing the money in a proper way? Well, it seems impossible to me to give medical help over the whole 3,000 square miles of our district, with our deep snow impassable when it begins melting, our snowdrifts, and the pressure of work at harvest time is impossible. Besides, I have no faith in medicine generally. Come now, this is unjust. I could cite thousands of cases to you, and how about schools? Schools, what for? What do you mean? Is it possible to doubt the utility of education? If it is good for you, why not for everybody? Constantine felt himself morally cornered, and in consequence became excited and involuntarily betrayed the chief cause of his indifference to social questions. All this may be very good, but why should I trouble about medical centers which I should never use, or schools to which I should never send my children, and to which the peasants would not wish to send theirs either, and to which I am not fully convinced they ought to send them, said he. This unexpected view of the question took Koznishev by surprise, but he immediately formed a new plan of attack. He remained silent a while, lifted his rod and threw the line again, and then turned to his brother with a smile. Now let's see. There is need of a medical center after all. Did we not send for the district doctor for Agna Mikhailovna? I can't do her name. Mikhailovna? But I think her hand will remain crooked all the same. That's very questionable, and then a peasant who can read and write is more useful to you and worth more. Oh, no, ask anyone you like, said Constantine decidedly. A peasant who can read and write is far worse as a laborer. They can't mend the roads, and when they build a bridge, they steal. However, all that is not to the point, said Koznishev, frowning. He did not like to be contradicted, especially when he was met with arguments that incessantly shifted the ground, introducing new considerations without sequence so that it was difficult to know which of them to answer first. Wait a bit. Do you admit that education is a good thing for the people? I do, replied Levin unguardedly, and at once realized that he had not said what he really thought. He felt that, since he admitted this much, it would be proved to him that he was talking meaningless twaddle. How would it be proved to him, he did not know, but he knew that it certainly would be proved logically, and waited for that proof. The proof turned out to be far simpler than Constantine anticipated. If you admit it to be good, said Koznishev, then as an honest man you cannot help loving and sympathizing with such movements and wishing to work for them. But I am not yet prepared to say that such work is desirable, returned Levin. What? Why, you said just now, I mean, I consider it neither desirable nor possible. You can't tell without having tried it. Well, let's grant it is so, said Levin, though he did not grant it at all. Still, I don't see why I should be bothered with it. What do you mean? No, since we have started on the topic, perhaps you had better explain it to me from a philosophical point of view, said Levin. I don't see what philosophy has to do with it, replied Koznishev in a tone that made it seem, at least Levin thought so, that he did not consider his brother had a right to argue on philosophical questions. This irritated Levin. This is what it has to do with it, he said, getting heated. I believe that in any case, the motive power of all our actions is our personal happiness. As present, I, nobleman, see nothing in our Zemstvo that could conduce to my welfare. The roads are not better and cannot be made better, and my horses do manage to pull me over the bad ones. I don't require doctors and medical centers. I don't need the magistrate. I never apply to him and never will. I only do not require schools, but they would even do me harm, as I have already told you. To me, the Zemstvo means nothing but a tax of 2 kopecks per... desyatina, my having to go to the town, sharing a bed with bugs, and listening to all sorts of nonsense and nastiness, and my personal interests do not prompt me to do it. Come, smilingly interrupted Koznishev, it was not our personal interests which induced us to work for the emancipation of the serfs, and yet we did it. No, no, Constantine interrupted, growing more and more heated. The emancipation of the serfs was quite a different matter. There was a personal interest in that. We wanted to throw off a yoke that was oppressing us all good men. But to be a member of a council, to discuss how many scavengers are required and how the drain should be laid in a town in which I am not living, to be on the jury and try a peasant who has stolen a horse, to sit for 6 hours on end listening to all sorts of rubbish jabbered by the council and prosecutors, and to the president asking our idiot Aleska Prisoner at the bar, do you plead guilty to the indictment of having stolen a horse? Konstantin Levin was being carried away and was impersonating the judge and the idiot Aleska. It seemed to him that all this was relevant to the case in point, but Koznishev shrugged his shoulders. Well, what do you want to prove by that? I only want to prove that I will always stand up with all my power for the rights which touch me and my personal interest. When they searched us students and gendarmes read our letters, I was ready to defend with all my power my right to education and liberty. I understand constriction which touches the fate of my children, of my brothers and myself, and I am ready to discuss what concerns me, but how to dispose of 40,000 rubles of Zemstvo money, or how to try the idiot Aleska, I neither understand nor can take part in. Konstantin Levin spoke as if the dam of his flood of words had been broken. Koznishev smiled. And tomorrow you may be going to law. Would you rather be tried in the old criminal court? I won't go to law. I am not going to cut anybody's throat, so I shall never be in need of that sort of thing. All those Zemstvo institution of ours, he said, again jumping off to a subject that had no bearing on the case in point, are like those little birches that are cut down for decorations at Whitsuntide, and we Russians stick them up to imitate the woods that have been grown up naturally in Western Europe. I cannot water these birches or believe in them from my soul. Koznishev only shrugged his shoulders to express his wonder at this sudden introduction of little birches into their discussion, though he had at once grasped his brother's meaning. Wait a moment, one can't reason that way, you know, he remarked, but Konstantin, wishing to justify the failing of which he was aware in himself, his indifference to the general welfare, continued. I think that no activity can endure if it is not based on personal interest. That is the common and philosophical truth, said he, emphasizing the word philosophical, as if he wanted to show that he might talk about philosophy as much as anyone else. Koznishev smiled again. He too has some philosophy or other to serve his inclinations, he thought. You'd better leave philosophy alone, said he. The principal task of philosophy has always, in all ages, been to find the necessary connection existing between personal and general interest. But that is not the point. I need only correct your illustration to get at the point. The birches are not stuck in, some of them are planted, and others are sown and have to be tended carefully. Only those peoples have a future, only those peoples can be called historic, that have a sense of what is important and great in their institutions and value them. And to prove the inaccuracy of Levin's views, Koznishev carried the conversation into the realm of philosophy and history which was beyond Konstantin's reach. As to your not liking it, pardon me, but that only comes of our Russian laziness and seigneurial habits, and I am sure that in your case it is a temporary error and will pass. Konstantin was silent. He felt himself beaten at every point, yet was sure that his brother had not understood what he had been trying to say. Only he did not know why this was so, whether it was because he could not express himself clearly, or because his brother either could not or did not wish to understand him. But he did not go deeply into these questions, and without replying to his brother, began reflecting on a totally different and personal matter. Koznishev wound up his last line, untied the horse, and they started on their homeward way. Jeez. I would have been like, hush, let's fish.